Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to remember those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must henceforth be forever cast into the abyss of dead names. In this moment of our remembrance, we prove with great grief and wailing the sincerity of our noble tolerance. What we once wrongly allowed in the ignorance of white privilege has become the cleansing rite of virtue signaling we use to prove our purity. Join with me now as we remember those we've lost. First, traditional washing machines. Yes, last month, President Biden's Department of Energy proposed new power and water efficiency standards for clothes washing machines that reduced their contributions to the global climate crisis. Although we certainly applaud this move, critics claim the machines will cost more to manufacture and, because they use less water and energy, the clothes will not be cleaned as well, meaning that people wearing them will basically be dirtier and smellier. But don't you see what a wonderful improvement this is? Just think of the pride you can take as you walk around in your off-white t-shirt and rank jeans, knowing that your aromatic effluvia are the demonstration to other people of your commitment to Mother Earth. In just the same way that Obama-era mandates to convert incandescent bulbs to the overly expensive, short-lived, and randomly dysfunctional LEDs gave us the opportunity to bask in the dim and flickering glow of our climate devotion, these new washing machines will usher in a bold new era of filth chic. For years, we've been trying to persuade Americans to embrace nature by abandoning their chemical cleaning products that stand defiantly against the glorious fragrance of natural smells and to stop waging their futile war against the beautiful, long, flowing leg and armpit hair. Birkenstocks unite! And what if we really embraced technological retrogression? Rather than seeking washboard abs, we could instead learn to embrace actual washboards and the clotheslines for drying that would so proudly proclaim the greenness of our devotion in all of their self-congratulatory glory. So come with me, dear Otherin, on the journey toward a climate-conscious lifestyle which is organic, authentic, soiled, and odoriferous. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, I want to take a moment to clarify our position on an important story in the news the past few days. Saturday Night Live featured a sketch poking fun at the heavy Irish accents of actors Brendan Gleeson and Colin Farrell, which made the dialogue in Banshees of Inisherin as opaque as a pint of Guinness. The sketch also joked about the well-documented fondness of the Irish for everything made out of alcohol. In response, Irish commentators complained that this was a form of racism, perpetuating ethnic slurs about the Irish, including that they are dirty, incoherent drunks who fight a lot and always forget where they buried their gold. But these responses truly misunderstand the concept of racism. It is literally impossible to be a racist when criticizing the Irish because, well, they're white. As McGillicuddy's fourth mumble from a Belfast drunk tank states, a joke which marginalizes another group of people on the basis of their race only expresses racism when the person making the joke is white and the targeted race is not. So although the Irish are correct that they're being stereotyped, our religion holds that harmful stereotypes against people without color are actually a good thing because they serve to knock Whitey down a peg and help him feel a small dose of the pain which actual racism has caused over the centuries. This is why, for example, the persistent jokes about gingers having no souls or about redheaded stepchildren or the repeated theft of supposedly Lucky Charms are always going to be acceptable to our movement because they only marginalize people without color. And jokes about PWCs will always be music to our ears. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And finally, let us acknowledge the progress towards complete gender meaninglessness being made by Wellesley College, the elite liberal arts school in Massachusetts, where the all-female student body recently voted to expand admissions to include transgender men. Since 2015, the school originally founded as Wellesley Female Seminary, and one of the historic Seven Sisters schools, has allowed enrollment by those assigned male at birth who now identify as women, and those assigned female at birth who currently identify as non-binary. But this week's vote finally also makes space for women assigned female at birth but identifying as male for this week. This means that the alma mater of such notable women as Hillary Clinton, Madeleine Albright, Cokie Roberts, Diane Sawyer, Nora Ephron, and Marjorie Stoneman Douglas is now both highly exclusive in most ways, but also highly inclusive in at least one way. The full Monty is welcome, so long as it wasn't born that way. Yes, the new Wellesley College for Women, Almost Women, Former Women, and Womanly Men will henceforth only prohibit one group of people, those assigned male at birth who persist in the irrational practice of identifying as men. As a gesture of their commitment to eradicating all concept of gender except that which can be used against men, The college also voted to stop referring to themselves as women, but rather as students. Because clearly, it is no longer in vogue for a woman's college to be composed of women. Although we do applaud all of these changes, obviously, and celebrate our dear Wellesley Utherin in their efforts to degender themselves, we do note how much pain could have been saved if this had only been done earlier. For those who may not know, one of the famous traditions at Wellesley is that upper class persons each have a large wooden hoop bequeathed to them by former alumni, which they roll across the campus while wearing their graduation robes each year in a competition, the winner of which was originally supposed to become the first to be married, then the first to become a CEO, and now to achieve success however she defines it. After the race, the winner is promptly thrown into Lake Waban by her classmates. Although this might seem like a strange reward, the tradition originated a few decades ago when a male Harvard student infiltrated the contest dressed as a woman and won the race, was subsequently unskirted, and dunked by the pearl-clutching feminists as punishment. Had Wellesley only been just a bit more enlightened at the time instead of so publicly othering the young drag queen, they would have simply offered to enroll the poor gender dysphoric transfer student into the Womine Studies program, as they in would surely do today. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Gathered round. And now, with these cleansing rites performed, may we all go forth in loving tolerance and microaggress no more. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all.